Alrighty, so let's call to order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, May 14th, 2015. First item is to approve our agenda. First item is call to order, then there's the officer election, the approval of minutes, public comment on non-agenda items, and the land use element deliberation and possible recommendation. I'll entertain a motion.
Move to accept the agenda as well.
Second? Moved by Curtis, second by Dick. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so the agenda is approved for this meeting. First item on the agenda is the officer election. I ask if we put on our agenda because our chair did not renew his term, and so I'd like to fill out our roles. In order to be an officer on the commission, it requires a nomination and a second. And we have two offices, which are chair and vice chair. With that, any questions?
Do we know, is Jim coming back?
Jim Lutton?
Yeah.
Yes. He had a question if he was
allowed to
outside the limits.
What was the issue? Allowed?
Outside city limits and the maximum number of people we can have that are outside.
Is it a good time to elect office, or we just have officers, or we have temporary until we get full house?
I find it appropriate to do it now versus waiting for another person. I don't know that a new person would want to jump into it.
Oh, no, I understand that. I'm just saying about the part of the process and being part of the journey.
Totally fine. Just sorry. That. If I'm going to get sick, then somebody has to jump in. I'd like to Any other nominations for chair? Okay. Well, then, in that case, all those in favor of nomination for myself as the chair, all those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all. I very appreciate the confidence in me. I know Rob has some big shoes that I hope you give me patience while I go into it. Okay, so with that, we need a vice chair. Any nominations for a vice chair? Is the approval of minutes from March 26, 2015. I'll entertain a motion to approve.
I move to approve the minutes for March 26, 2015.
And second?
Second.
Okay, Curtis. Any changes, comments, or amendments?
I feel that to be as short as a meeting was.
Yes. It was very brief.
Is that our record?
We can close the record.
Close. Okay, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the March 26th meeting? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so minutes are approved. Next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Seeing no one from the public in our attendance, we will move on then to item number 5, which is the land use element deliberation and possible recommendation. And if staff is ready, we could begin with a brief introduction and
sure.
Update.
Sure, we just got to get it fired up to show up on the screen. So we have reviewed the land use element at, you know, a number of meetings starting May of 2014. We've had about 10 meetings on the chapter, some of them comprised of workshops where we had the map out and we had color dots and... Yes?
Mark Ramsey, I am the GIS technician. I ran the build-out and the land use
So, we also had everybody kind of take certain sections of the chapter. It's a long chapter, and proposed edits to that. So, the chapter that you have in front of you has a clean version. We've accepted changes. We did a lot of reorganization of the chapter, so the table of contents changed a lot. We combined different sections into one. We wordsmithed, we moved things around to make more sense. And then the recent step was with Mark, you know, providing the buildable lands capacity. You have in on your table a copy of this colored pie chart. So these changes, I think, would be good if I just went over, and then if I think of anything else to capture in the one that was in your packet, I will. And then we can open it up for questions and discussion. And staff met with Gary, and he had some input on, well, I think this would be helpful. So a lot of this new text that's shown in track changes reflects that. So I'll just quickly run through it. The first page, page 9 of 30, with the pie chart, that was just a new added pie chart to show the breakdown of the zones within the city. On the next page, just to kind of summarize our target, our housing target, yes. Yes, sure. Our housing target, 665 units, and that's for the planning period of 25 years, starting in 2006 to 2031. And our employment target was 1,050. We are showing that we have plenty of capacity in both those areas. That's basically what the buildable analysis section gets to. We added some text under H.3 related to a market factor. And in previous analysis, we had applied a market factor, which is the amount of land that's basically not available at the market at a certain time for whatever reason. Either the economy, we had a moratorium, so we applied a market factor saying it's just not realistic that all this land is going to be available and up for sale and turning over and developed. Well, we decided for this analysis to not, by default, not include a market factor, meaning, you know, we think we're going to see highest and best use. We think things are going to get built out. If we were going to apply one, for example, in residential, 5% would probably be about the max we would want to apply. And you could add that or take that factor into account at the end of our calculation. So we did that here, basically saying if a 5% market factor were applied, residential land supply would go from 472 total adjusted net acres to 448, a reduction of 23.6 acres. So overall, 5% impact with a 5% market adjustment. Not a lot of change, not a lot of change in the build out. But we just added that in there. Gary wanted to have some discussion around that. It's hard to have a crystal ball and figure out what is the market factor. It's going to go up and down, fluctuate.
So was that just taken as an average?
That was just our best estimate of kind of what we've seen. Did we use the 5% before in our previous analysis?
Yeah, in 2006.
Okay. Again, maybe moratorium, economy.
Like an outlier.
And the analysis calls us to determine your capacity. So your highest and best use, your capacity at full build out, what is it going to be? So going to the next page, we added that first sentence, approximately 700 single family cottage or multifamily units are in the pipeline right now. Just updated information to show we're basically going to meet our housing target of 665 units really quickly. On the top of page 24, that first sentence is that's shown in red. And then, again, based on comments, we added another paragraph about where our populations projected to be at build out. That was derived by basically the table below. Our current capacity shows 2,821 units. And we took a factor of 2.2 people per unit, renter occupied 2.8 people. We took what our rent versus own ratio was, and we came out with full build out 2031, 12,988 people. It's the first sentence in that paragraph above the table.
Page 40.
Yeah. Population projections at full build out. And then that paragraph goes on to explain how we came to that number, just using the best information that we could.
Is there a newer census than 2010? I thought there was one this year.
They do the 5-year community census, the ACS 5-year, which is not as reliable as the 2010. So every 10 they do the decennial census, which is the most reliable. So where possible, we look at that one, because the 5-year is they send out a sample survey, so not every person has to fill it out. So the 2010 census is accurate, and we try to use that when possible.
Wasn't there a census
last year? Not the decennial one.
Not the December,
there may have been the American Community Survey runs 5 years, so like the most recent one was 2009 to 2013, and it might have been those. Mark, am I explaining? You know the.
You're correct on federal census. OFM, Washington State Office of Finance Man, gives a April 1st estimate for every community. It's an estimate based on housing units that they track. There also is a shift for the annexation for the special census. I just actually did the special census for the recent annexation, but we won't see that population shift until the next quarter.
So how's it trending relative to the 2010?
They don't give housing, the population for housing. They give you a map number. They base all their housing breakdowns on veterans. They don't give that into the community.
I'm just wondering
if the calculations are in 2010
or if there's any other things that use as the
gotcha.
Which one? Where are you looking
right now?
Anywhere I see 2010 census data. Okay. Scratching my head. Why would it have to be more relevant? Would it be added to support for 2010? Or you understand the principles for why it exists.
Definitely. There's a 5-year program in our communities. That is the most recent. But the samples really advantage geographic.
So just as I've said, you've been doing this method for the last 30 years. Every 10 years. The census is based upon basic projections on the previous 10 years of the census. So how do we prepare a build out to that 2010 to 2050,000? So you sound very confident that the 2010 is the one to go with, based upon prior experience.
So are you asking, did we do the same thing in 2000?
2000. And you're, well, when the question is asked, which projection?
Right.
You go back on 2000.
In 2010, we would have probably
Right, I understand. But this was there a projection in our house?
I've seen projections since I've been with the city, and they were close to 14,000, so they were within 1,000 of what this is. Full build out, you know, and things have changed. And
well, that's the other thing too, especially coming out of our conversation about the size of this factor variance, or a factor to consider if we're taking the other time. Is there a plus up factor that we should consider? The reason why I asked that is that we have more as other weird things happen. The economy is not back on track. The housing market's booming over the top of Seattle and Bellevue, which will likely push people out in the suburbs, which is awesome. So I'm wondering how much, how accurate 2010 data would be given the things that we're seeing in terms of the same present marketplace. And that's fine if we use 2010, but is there a factor or something that we can employ to invest in that would account for that those possible changes?
Well, I think if I might be able to answer your question in a different way. The 2010 is the base where we started out for population. My question was, if we look at highest and best use using their methodology of population, it's going to say highest and best use for the zones that we've applied. Does that make sense? So there shouldn't be anything more you have to apply as a factor. Does that make sense? Because we've already taken into account highest and best use.
So at the current bulk unconventional standards, this is the most that it could be. So,
and actually, to caveat that, in residential, you're probably not going to be able to get the highest and best use calculation because of all the stormwater and open space that they have to provide.
Yeah.
I mean,
and then even given that we're trying to promote more natural preservation,
On paper, you're probably going to see more units in the mixed use zones. We have one development scenario really a lot of time. And when you look at that, the units are a little high, but when you back down into the one site, the parking, and so on, the buildings, they won't be able to.
So, Jamie, I don't know if you want to continue on with
the
descriptions.
So, the second half of the table. Yes. Job capacity analysis. We did.
Windows peak.
We did some calculations on using the 2010 decennial U.S. Census data. 3,191 persons over the age of 16 are employed in the labor force. That doesn't show if they're employed inside or outside the city, but we know that we have that many employed people in the city. Yes. So assuming 1.4 persons per household, we came up with a additional 3,949 would be added to the employment in our planning period for a total of 7,140.
Is there anything that shows small business growth or sort of economic growth that would plug with people? Because flag on the patent part too. It's that there's 3,000 people according to the census. Mm-hmm. You know, things have changed since then. Considerably, especially with the Miller Farm. And the 2010 census is going to be impacted by the Miller Farm data.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm.
I think you're asking good questions about the numbers. I think our challenge is to have a really good launching place that we can base numbers on and think about in 20 years where we're going to be. And so,
disagree, and that's my whole point on that, is that if we're going to have a good precedent, a platform to build on, we should probably get as accurate as we can, especially since we're buying 20 years out. That's my whole question.
Yes,
my goal in my head. And if there's ways to substantiate it, say, hey, look, this is actually a really good estimate built on some numbers that make sense based on this one.
We have opportunities to adjust these numbers.
Yeah, it's hard, and I mean, King County and demographers who work on this full time, I mean, you know, they provided what we have, you know, with some of the analysis, but drilling it down to that level. So the last thing oh yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say that the King County demographers keep coming back and saying that it's all different cities to track and update information. It's even in the same.
Last page that had some track changes, page 26, commercial and industrial land supply. Again, we tried to elaborate on if there was a market factor applied, what change that would have. For commercial and industrial, we gave the example if a 10% market factor were applied.
So what right time?
Because the actual marketplace, the commercial and industrial, we're not seeing much. If you look at the table at the top, you look at the what's in the middle, it's really good. So
they can have their own.
So again, applying a 10% market factor would give us a 10% reduction in the amount of acres. And again, we just added a lot of this to substantiate some of the tables, to provide a little bit more background and current information, if it's helpful. So, other than that, I guess we can go through however you guys would like. If you have anything.
Well, I just want to say thank you very much for getting a lot of these updates made in a timely factor. Mm-hmm. Appreciate the time you spent. As we go through and discuss Planning Commission, want to get your thoughts on how best to go through this. And we can go page by page, which is the slowest way. Mm-hmm. We can go high level, if you want to talk a discussion about the data points in here and if it reflects our vision, if it's what the plan introduction is saying to us to ensure does it, and if we have the right mix of zones. So wherever you want to go, does anybody have any thoughts on how they'd like to go through it?
That's where I look at this pie chart we have, where if you got it. look, this reflects our current situation. You guys have the opposite, a pie chart that would be a visionary pie chart.
That's the forecast.
The best situation. This on the front page, the same pie chart.
Mm-hmm.
All other sectors in the pie chart that were lagging, that we have
projected.
Or what maybe an ideal balance would be.
What would be our, if our plan was working out the way we had projected it, how would this pie chart go?
Oh, this, sorry.
What would success look like?
Yeah, that's, so man, that would be tough. I mean,
you talk about the segments you want to get the segments.
Yeah, every city is going to be unique to that. What is perfect for North Bend?
We worked up with something back, whenever, and we had a projected pie chart.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that projected pie chart to work to this, what we're working on?
You mean from years ago?
Oh, Jamie, I'm talking about working against some previous plan.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're here in 2015. We had a plan established maybe 5 years ago, and we're working towards that plan. So what was the pie chart, just to say, in 2010, that we visualized, and how we're comparing with what we visualized?
One thing of note was there may have been a visionary pie chart, but there wasn't actually one on paper to compare to. And it is just showing the changes that the U.S. Planning Commission have recommended. We don't have one that shows what an ideal situation North Bend would look like, and that's up to you to decide as our planning commission.
If I can just offer this, I think the pie chart was helpful because it gives a visualization of the zones and how they fit within the overall mix, and how it's up to us to determine, does that make the right mix for our city? Is that what we want for North Bend? Does that fit the vision of North Bend? I think we can ask the planning professionals if there is a great small town mix to ensure healthy growth and vitality, jobs and economics, right? There's got to be some data that says you have so much for industrial or business versus residential. If you have, 70-80% residential, it's not necessarily a healthy mix unless your 20% is really a thriving.
Same table, distribution of land uses. You can compare it to the one you have in your hand, and I'll read off this. So basically, low density, we were showing 30%. Now we're showing 35%. But we also have some constrained residential. Cottage, 1%. That's the same. High density, 1%. Now we're up to 2%. So that changed slightly. Your change, commercial 2%, same, neighborhood business 10%. We have 4. We have 4. And it shows 4, so the same. Employment part was 10. Slight reduction in that. Employment part 2, 3%. Same. So, since 2007, we haven't seen a huge change in distribution of land uses.
So I'm saying with all the changes that we made, we're staying consistent.
Mm-hmm. Roughly proportional.
So all of our efforts are trying to promote both the work and stuff.
Well, it's not capturing infill and this is just distribution of land uses. So how much area do we have in D.C.? Well, that hasn't changed too much. How much area do we have in OER? Well, that hasn't changed too much because we did pre-annexation zoning and then we annexed all these areas. So we kind of already predicted what are we going to see here. So I think it's probably good we haven't seen a lot of big changes unless we wanted to see those changes, you know. We had a desire to.
The changes that were made in zoning weren't too disruptive, right?
Mm-hmm. And hopefully you also had a chance to look at the figures. Because they're pretty.
So, I don't know if anybody has a preference on working through the plan. I have a thought is just to start with, you know, page one, who has changes, and then ask what the next page you all have, so we can try and work through it quickly. But it could sometimes turn into an every page exercise, right? Do you have any comments or questions?
I think that would be the other one.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if we categorize it into two things, content versus a formatting grammar. Most of my notes are around, are we going to use the actual comma or not? Are we capitalizing the city or not? Are we bold printing this or not? Because there's a lot of just inconsistency in the formatting, which is one thing.
Brendan, my personal preference is to take all formatting and hand it to the staff and not even discuss it.
Yeah.
And speak more towards what you see in the content and then the philosophical rural town fit.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. So the page three of chapter one, land use element, has an introduction, and I think it's important in that first paragraph that this purpose, this document's purpose, next 20 years, by introducing strategies that will retain and enhance small town character, quality and environment, culture, and economic sustainability. So that was my checkpoint to go back to as I read through this. I just want to get us all on a consistent page. So I have something on A3. Does anybody have anything before that? So I'd like on the second sentence of A3 where it says the plan is to call the plan first Puget Sound Regional Council Vision 2040 plan. Or just give it its formal title first. Because Vision 2040 doesn't give you the context of what it is from. So okay. I think the Puget Sound Regional Council gives you a better context of that they were looking at the region that not perfect.
Okay.
Anything on page three? Page 4. Page 5.
The risk of there's a lot of confusion about using the proper name of what Ben May called was, what it is now. It's been called Old 90, which was Old 90. It was always SR10. I mean North Benway was SR10. I-90 is I-90. It's not, I think that clear is it's still called Highway 10, and the court is just a state route.
There was
in
particular?
Along North Benway.
The entire page has a lot of references to the old highway. It's like a paragraph of old interstate 90. C.3 SR10 Highway 10. It's SR10. It drives me crazy if I just hold up the road with that.
That's what I heard.
It is calling you into what really happens with that. And maybe the road generic, in this case, the old state. Because I think they would have the I even used that for someone recently.
But we still did. have SO2 and 2 and SO2 and 2 SO, it's left on 4 for the
moment. But I think if we did the task of the is that for solar, creates a potential for people who to just reference that because it's in common usage, just refer to as well. Maybe in the interest of accuracy, to not call it well, but rather reference it as a well state.
And one of the first paragraphs, you could say SR10, also known as the old I-90 or old state highway, and then continue calling it the be more consistent throughout. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think the next thing I have on page 5. Under C1 history and existing development patterns, if you could look at the edited version. Said development constraints such as aquifer recharge areas, river streams, floodplains, wetlands, steep slopes, and geologically unstable soil define the existing development limits and predict the shape of future development activity along key corridors.
Right.
I'm just wondering, does that no longer apply?
It's in there twice.
Shows up
so if you go under natural features, it's in the first paragraph.
Right where my cursor is.
As the last sentence.
Yeah. Well, that's a problem with track changes and things moving around. So.
Yeah. Okay. No, but thanks for
that. Thank you. All right. Anything else on page 5? Page 6? 7? Page 8?
Yes.
Think about what you're saying. I think the spirit of that policy is about encouraging the developer to put the homes in one spot, not spread out over the expanse, and that way there's a created a saving of that natural landscape.
So
find a property that's natural and build on it. So we need to retain as much natural in that zone.
And one way is by cluster. I think there might be other ways.
A critical areas element, you know, is the no net loss, the...
This opens the door to a conversation about how you have two parts of the processes that we conserve too much of the natural habitat at the expense of the building. Like you, I get on my bicycle and ride around there. Talk to a neighbor who lived in the Cedar Falls. I ask these questions. You know, he didn't know this. He was a cop. But I asked him about how long he lived there. He was there a year. He has two kids. He enjoys the neighborhood. It's a safe neighborhood. It's good. The one thing that he did offer me was something I hadn't thought of. He said, you feel safe here. He said, I feel safe. I feel like I'm limiting my privacy. By that, he's talking about the loss of what to close. He doesn't want to feel like he has full privacy. And that's why I couldn't put that in my mind when I was feeling like my driver was killed. He's like, he did put it out there. He does feel like he shares the privacy with his neighbors.
They've never gone to the old zoning standards that you can no longer get that sort of that density now.
Yeah, we have a little bit more elbow room. But
yeah.
I appreciate your comment, but not well placed in this document, because while you're expressing, you know, that thought, what we do with lot sizes, there's nothing in this document.
It does go to the philosophy of retaining as much vegetation. I'm saying that temperament, that vigor, that regimen of saving vegetation, I think that is driving us to these small lot discussions. That's why I'm bringing that. I think it's too aggressive in terms of saving vegetation.
Well, we already have something in place. I believe this is a little aggressive. Encouraging. It's not necessarily.
So I think the language in this policy drives the lot size very respectfully. I think that this is where we start resorting out policy. How do we, in this chapter, what we say is how we work on the understanding.
So my question for staff is, if you're going to have a cluster development and the minimum lot size is 8,000 square feet, can you cluster any smaller than that to have some reserve space?
I think there'd be some amounts built into the code right now to figure out exactly what that would be.
The one thing that does come to mind is in cottage residential, just came up today, they can go a little bit greater impervious surface on their lot, as long as they're leaving it on the whole flat. So I think 60 or 65 is a max impervious, and there's also a building lot number that they have to meet. But in cottage residential, since the lots are smaller, is looked at as a whole, so their common space that they have comes towards that. So I think that answers part of the question.
We haven't seen true.
So depending on what the zone is, and
right,
certainly
not,
LDR is 8,000, but
7,500 is the
ultimate.
We haven't seen true cluster development, really. Again, we have always encouraged it, allowed it. Work through P&D or work with a developer to try to meet those goals and balance everything. It hasn't happened yet.
So I just suggest that offer something that the language that we're talking about in terms of standards or are thinking about the gold standards as we translate saying that we're not going to. That's a criticism I think we're offering for the people.
Are you talking more, to me, I would almost like to get rid of the cluster development, just talk about retention of natural habitat and natural landscape that exists rather than clear cutting and grading and then building, right?
Exactly.
Are you talking about the change?
Gone are the days that we level everything and build it up again. I think that's wrong.
So, the only thing I don't know, and this for somebody that moves more on trees, is I've been told a lot of times it's going to be safer to take down the middle trees versus the edge trees, which bear the wind and have grown the stronger roots, right? So, depending on how the development is situated, how are we then to put residents at risk if that's the deemed, you know, science?
It's a risk. The entire stand is weakened, that the outside trees have more stability because of the bone and the wind. But more dominant trees in the center, there's more focus there.
Well, this is your concern that you were talking about, putting everything floating up. I think it's addressed in that the point that we were just talking about, encouraging the retention of natural habitat. So, in this example that you just talked about, the encouragement there, the retention of it would be the outside trees or whatever the most wind savvy trees are, they develop less than it, right? So we have encouraged it, and it's not so much that we're penalizing for it, we do have some other things that go into play, but we're also offering incentives for doing so. So to me, this seems more of a passive pat on the back than a mandate saying, do this or else, right? So, I mean, and just in the examples that you just illuminated, it seems that it's covered without being punitive to the development. Because I agree, I mean, but encouraging them to preserve what's there, if possible, if not, then what's sustainable.
We have older communities in our town that we don't have to talk about sagging.
Old side?
Old side. With the new, the bar streets, the sidewalks, all that has to be. Issue where we're saving vegetation, it satisfies the desire of quality of life to save vegetation, which is also vegetation, but it didn't save everything to get the maximum use of it for habitation in that space. And what it happens. And the language in here we're talking about is policy of minimizing the use of habitat, saving lives, low cost, drives us to having, you know, these 6,500 foot blocks, 6,000 foot blocks, really the marsh lots we're talking about. So I'm just trying to think, we need to set a better expectation for ourselves about balancing the retention of existing vegetation with the ability standards for.
So you're thinking that that's a voiceover in our head as we move through this, or that we actually write something up there that states that? So the flip side of that is that depending on what I want to get out of my property when I develop it, if I want to charge more for the house and get a bigger house and get a bigger lot, so I may be inclined to do more retention and I get incentive for it. But if I want to squeeze it for everything I can for it, I'm going to develop it, then I should be able to do that and I won't get any incentives for that. And unfortunately, buy that house, know that they're going to have some elbow room issues, right? So to me, it seems almost like it's up to the developer to build. We encourage to go one direction, can based on that choice. But the person buying the home has the ability to say, yes, I'll live here, no, I won't. So I guarantee when I buy the property, it's actually the same thing. It's too close. My wife and I are very passionate. We yell and scream all the time, and I don't want to upset my neighbors with that.
Right.
So I love it. I won't be a speaker. So we can bellow all night long. It's great. But you see what I mean? So I think there's some other.
Here, John, they say, I think, in not private, but not formally, he said that he thinks he's getting too tight.
Yeah.
But it sells. Right. So that's the developer's half. But he understands that he's kind of, he'd rather
office space problems.
And I'm wondering if this is actually solving something further down the road, or if we just kind of keep it in the back of our minds as we move forward.
If you get a bad knock and not know, you know, our community is still growing, people are still thinking about moving out here, making the commute in. But I think we're getting a knock. Didn't look too much like Bellevue, too much like the village in our newer neighborhoods. And so I make the whole kind of thought in the center. And they're not that much cheaper out here. Because the village basically wants that. So I'm just saying, and let's deliver upon what we're saying. We're saying we want a rural lifestyle, we want, you know, what we're saying in these very first.
It almost sounds like on LU 1.4 that you would want to just encourage retention of natural habitat and residential developments with sustainable landscaping and nothing about clustering. So, would you like to make a motion to strike that allow cluster development? I think that's what getting you to what you're speaking.
Yes.
So the motion is to amend policy LU 1.4 by striking and by creating zoning incentives that allow cluster development, or do you want to keep and by creating zoning incentives?
Period.
Okay, so just strike that allow cluster development. So again, the motion is to amend policy LU 1.4 by striking that allow cluster development. Is there a second?
Sorry, I'm trying to imagine.
C.6 Community Designs and Mixed Use at the top, the first paragraph. It is the third sentence. Mixed use development can provide a better jobs to housing balance. Yeah. Balance of jobs and housing. I'm not sure what the intent is there.
We have to go back through. Is this
No, I think I'm not sure what the meaning is. So it's not as much of a strike the S.
I was like, oh yeah, it's Harper's Heads.
I just think Jobs 2 is not important. It's a chart. Better. House of Balance. I think Jobs 2 kind of depends.
Well, no, I think
it
needs a hybrid there.
Jobs 2 housing.
Way. It should be there. That's how I would do.
Or a balance of jobs and housing. I don't know if you want to say it. Just,
well, if you do the hybrid, then Jobs 2.
Okay. Okay. Nice, you know.
Jobs. Brendan, you're...
LU under goal 2, LU 2.4, LU 2.5. Okay, so in reading this, these two seem... apparently the same. So I'm wondering if we can do one, or if they are uniquely different, how so? Please advise.
Came across this a lot.
Yeah.
Combined goals, so for policies.
And I'm all about eliminating redundancies.
Yes.
Historic and cultural preservation are one thing, sites were something different. Is our culture, Brendan, is our culture one that you can go to QMC and you always run into someone you know? Are we going to promote keeping that? You know, that to me is what culture 2.4 is versus a physical structure.
Preserve sites and structures that are historic and cultural value. The other one is develop relationships between historic and cultural preservation and economic development. I guess those two are
certainly. I was just going to say, at least the first thing this way for me is maybe this way you're asking is we're talking about any of these ways and it's an individual being the priority addressing it through the historic preservation sites.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, it's like, okay, we want to foster these relationships to preserve something, right? But then when I look at it as to preserve something for economic development, that's something that's a different point than securing preservation for something.
Some of the religious
things,
So you have two separate things. There's the preservation of the sites, which you don't care about.
Right.
It's you just maintaining the culture. It's preserving things that told me the house there,
like how much they spent.
No, it's like the lady that cut the holes in the kitchen to the bedroom and the preserved residence. There are some interesting stories. And then you have a separate thing. You have these goals where they come into a community and they are specifically trying to encourage things that are going to bring that level of development to the downtown historical. So to be high. And I think that we've seen some of those successes with a number of projects that have been done just recently in the restoration of the songs. So you do have, yes, they are the same, but there's a different quality of work on top of it. There's a different quality of work with the production of it. It's saying that it's our goal. We're telling you as a city, we want you to see this. Versus things that sometimes fall into laws that it wasn't able to provide a good margin of preservation of our culture. It's in, you know, they can go through and they went up and it's all the things that must be acknowledging dark, but they can then build over. So this is saying that, hey, we would like, when you come across one of these sites, we want you to see what you can do to preserve it. So it, yes, there's a government, I think that we could come up with a way. But they are two distinct, it's not two systems the same as the
same. I'd like to keep separate more because of the difference. But the same sentence that comes from the paragraph is keep separate. You have two separate points.
Thanks for that, Elizabeth. If you would give them separate.
Yeah, I just, when I read it,
anything else on page 8?
Well, you know, the old warehouse stack is still standing. They tried to take it down. And we fought against it because that stack, that particular stack, was without a brick. Made by artistic masons who built it. Look at it and see if it was made. The smoke stack didn't comply with it.
By there, you mean warehouse?
Yeah, well, they and even prior to the warehouse, they were fishers and all that. They had built that powerhouse before the warehouse was on site. And it was messed up. Even they wanted the warehouse wanted to eliminate all of that structure. They basically just wanted to provide buildings. And what didn't make sense? Well, so the community agreed to it, and now it's an historic site. And now that whole site can be used and developed with that potential of that money.
That makes perfect sense for 2.5.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find where the 2.4.
That would be if you uncovered a canoe, a dugout, a carved dugout, and all that little pot somewhere, that would be an example of the first one.
Well, I would see it more as we need to broker the relationship with the fishers who own the historic property to develop it for some economic purposes, or develop better relationships with the Snoqualmie tribe to do something, to do X for the government.
Got it.
Well, I can speak to 2.5 of the section of the issue. And also, it's very possible that this house is still going to be the field to go over and get funding. So we can watch it. Well, if you're up here, come up here and build it, so it's not like a lot of people like a village, but you can find it in the context. But L2.4 is more what we need to do downtown. And pursuing money to encourage business owners like this to restore and to bring the land to downtown, because now it's downtown and we're building.
But that gets to 2.5 though, because
it is structured. And I think that that's where, I think there's some confusion, because the way I split it is, yes, it involves structures, but where 2.4 involves is bringing in money to make that into a money maker. For example, if you turn tollgate into a museum, that we bring in money to see how much farmers have, then you bring it into 2.4 or 2.5. Right now, it's just a structure that we're maintaining and preserving because it's a historical story. It wouldn't go into 2.4 until we actually try to do something.
So as you're the building owner, I need to come with the city. How to come to you to promote some sort of relationship where we both benefit by preserving the site.
And most of us don't come for the majority of grants. This is our opportunities. So it's not necessarily promoting, but it's facilitating relationships with organizations that can provide help.
For this, with you, you live in this town, I'm sure, but the whole, if the merchandising scheme looked like a Swiss village, and they put all these peak roofs out there. You were there, weren't you? You saw it.
My aunt was in the information booth for many years, and it looked like
That was a total commercial enterprise, but it's competitively government. It worked about that much.
Yeah.
And so restoring the town back the way it was, which is a healthy thing. It was a desperate move. I mean, it was a desperate move to save this town. Clearly, we were dying back then. So what would you do? You tried something, but the community now is realizing the value of the old historical.
And we do it in a certain respect, and we feel like
thank you all for your good comments and appreciate that. I just want to make note of the time. We're on page 9 of 29. I'd like to try and get through it tonight. So if we can get back to the document. I'm on page 9. Is there anybody else with something on page 8 before we move off? Okay. Page 9, D2, Parks, Open Space, and Public Facilities. The last sentence of the first paragraph, together with land identified, it goes on and on. It's very wordy. It's like you try to combine two things, and I got lost in it.
And let's echo that note for the third paragraph. I have a question mark. Is this incomplete? What's wrong? I agree there's some parts of the section that just seem like it should stop and go choppy, but it's losing track and not sticking. And then, do we just define GIS earlier? We're using acronyms. I don't recall it. I mean, maybe
if this now, I think you turned that in the bottom of the
Yeah. I don't know if it was called out anywhere, but we should.
Unless you want to go through those changes together, or the sentences, you can do that. We're not making substantial changes, we're just.
I think I understand the spirit of what you're saying.
It's not digestible.
What was the one you had? You said the third paragraph.
The city is well served.
Okay.
I mean, I have it for a few of them.
Okay.
But.
That again, like you said, like the narrative form that you're writing. Like, it's quite weird. Sometimes you get hung up like getting through all that.
Okay. Understand.
The last paragraph also goes in that, so I'll put the page up and talk with it.
One other thing that came up for me is it seems a bit misleading. I've seen it over here, but thanks. To have a partnership with space and public facilities, knowing that what public facilities includes is both my elementary and the power station, I think parks and open space, I think, is something completely different than that. And it makes sense to combine zone together and all those things, but I feel like it would be more transparent and a little bit more accurate if at some point those things were divided.
We have talked about that.
The city, in the future, the city may.
I think we.
I know we looked at it, and I can't remember if we took it out because it had said it in the previous comp plan as well, and it happened, so we were discussing whether we've been there or not.
Proposing it for this major rezoning,
no,
but just at some point, how much of the 640 million acres are actually parcel space versus the commercial?
I agree. When you look at it on the map, it's easier to tell if they are separated.
Yes.
So D3, can we talk? I know earlier I was bringing up 2010 U.S. Census, but this is start talking about population estimations B in 2010. Is there any part of this that we can update, or is it census found population extending specifically? So population extending throughout the urban growth area is estimated at 8,423 in 2010. Over 2015. So where are we at with that? Do we even need to have that in there? Or we say 2010 census found this. Presently, in May of 2015, we are at this, right?
Based on
something. Where our calculations are whatever it is.
The issue is that the county doesn't track population separately for that.
That we currently don't do. That we currently don't do at all.
Correct. What is there any way to get the estimated to give how many people we can have?
That is in the table.
Second sentence goes away because it's not applicable anymore. We've annexed.
So I think the sentence goes away, but if we're going to lead with what these findings of 2010 were, then we should have some relevant benchmark for where we are now. Yeah. Which I think is the point.
Well, in the UGA, the registered voters can't be in the field.
Estimated to be at 8,424. So that means it's not changed since then.
I see your point.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to
figure out how
we can quantify it because of the change in the city's boundary in relationship to the EGA. It becomes a.
How about registered voters?
It looks like we have more numbers than we do because we can't.
Yeah.
Then we should. Contextualize that sentence if it's something that we need to keep because we guys are
fine. I don't think we need to keep it.
So if we got rid of the population estimate throughout the urban growth area and just include the 2010 city limits, say the 2010 census found this, the estimate from the ACS data for 2014 or whatever the most recent one was this.
You know, I'd have to see it to see if I could really process it. But yeah, I think I'm on the right track. But maybe to your point, population extending through the urban growth area was estimated to be 8,423 in 2010. This size has not changed since then. To your point earlier, something's still relevant.
Yeah.
Either way, and then it's funny because you brought up the chart thing. You see my chart up here. It's like we're looking at some historical data, and
we start doing on-site tests data, if we get a bunch of different charts here, it might be helpful. And then we can eliminate a lot of the tests and say, here's the breakouts in this chart. Because I just read on and on, it's like, okay, 1999 gets this, and 1969 is that, 1960 is that, and then wait, but in 1954, you know, it's this, and just, and it's just more about the score.
So are you suggesting taking out some of the historical data there?
I'm thinking that maybe if we either put the context that historically, this is the, I mean, that's what I think the germane point is, is to help frame our mindset going forward through the data concept, use reference, blah, blah, blah. Just that section.
A table and put it in the historical section.
Well, I would encourage you to make some use of charts and tables because by the time I got to the table section, I was exhausted. Maybe we could put all the tables in the back that keep all the text going from page to page, and then we just reference it because as a reader, especially as a doctor, I like to pull out the table and read on the page. Oh, it's page 4. As opposed to having it incorporated after two sentences,
I'm looking at the entire D5 and saying,
hold on before you get to D5, we're still on D3. I kind of disagree that it's all historical. I think of it of a statement of here's where the city is, here's where the population is outside of our city limits, but inside the urban growth boundary, given the impression that if we were to expand, this is the increase based on 2008.
I don't get the distinction there. Here's where we are.
Yeah, this is just an introduction to the residential land use, so we get to that later.
Right, I understand. Yeah.
I'm taking it the census with the people in North Bend and the housing units. And an increase of 459, is that really all? Since 2000?
Well, we're at the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but there was 200 last year.
But you're talking 2010.
Oh, it's not 2000?
2000 to 2010.
Yep. I'm reading since 2000, so that should be 2010.
No, that's only 2010. Yeah. Since 2000.
Sorry.
An increase of 459 houses since 2000.
Yeah.
Because it's trying to support what the census finding is of 5,000.
And of those, it gives a breakdown of what they were.
It shows that 10-year growth.
I think here would be some place where we could input our permitted, or just a reference to see the LDR table, whatever it is. That would be kind of in your line to see the current data of what we've permitted since 2010. Refer to this table.
Chart to reference.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that certainly back there? I just don't know which ones.
They had offered the formation was D3. The timing is like this. Can you just begin with the period card map of 59 and work your way up? Begin the period of just. Say it that way. Start on match 4 and try to make comparisons. We just pretend to put the first quarter 59 and then the next period, the next period, and the end of the next period.
Yeah, and then they get public sewer and water, because there's some other things like so we're talking about units and population, and also talking about sewer and water system. But I did that.
What I'm getting so I like it is this thing, the driver's narrative. You know, the person's writing the way they talk. But in this kind of factual information, it works better. It's just the thing that's not going to happen.
So the table I'm thinking that we should reference is on page 21. It's page 2A, Residential Permit Plat Activity, 1996 to 2014. Back to page 10, and Mr. Ryan, D5.
Yes, sir. I'm always reading my own things, and I did three or four things that a neighbor decides to join me by the walk in the distance of the center. And as I read this entire paragraph, I found myself thinking about a highly vertical community like Seattle, where the neighborhoods are more blocky setting and all that. It seems like this, the tone of the series of paragraphs were great for the downtown employee, talking about compacted, the word compacted living. Is in here. High density shops, walking to jobs. That works for the downtown 5 or 6 blocks in that area, but it doesn't work when you're out in the middle for community. It works maybe for recreational walking, but it doesn't tie into your job. You know, that's not a job center community. So, are we really talking about the when we're describing this, we really mean to try to apply to all the neighborhoods, all 15 of them, are being viewed in this way, or is it just the downtown set?
Yeah, the original intent was that each of these neighborhoods, we had a chart, and we said, you know, if you live in, you know, what's the word called? The Meadowbrook Tollgate, you know, your center, would be along Bulge. If you live in the Middle Fork, you know, it might be at the school. So it was just points of interest more, and they defined them by the neighborhoods. We've kind of gone...
That's a delicious way of doing it.
Yeah.
Hats off to you. I love that idea. But
yeah. In reality,
we're not going to be having our jobs in the tool.
So a neighborhood center could be a school, it could be a park. I think that was the intent. It doesn't have
to. See, I want to get away from the compacted notion that everything in the neighborhood is going to be compacted. I think that I see it in the downtown core where land is at a premium and you really want to go more vertical. You might even get a 3-story someday, hopefully. Oh. But in the residential, where it's more residential than anything else, I would like to see that terminology compacted. Just back to page 5, we're talking about cluster space like that. I'm reading more and more about Seattle Times, a complete story about people walking in Seattle. They live there for us, you know, walk around. And it's pretty neat. You can live your life that way. Mm-hmm. Not even own a car, I just walk to work, walk to shop, walk to this. Mm-hmm. That's not our reality, except for maybe the downtown core. I see people living like that. Where we have markets, we have food centers in that area, but that's going to be our walk in the town.
So the second paragraph, you know, is kind of summarizing a lot of that. You know, neighborhood size is defined by a neighborhood, you know, walking distance. Neighborhoods have been designed in such a way that jobs, housing, and services may be readily available to the local residents, often within walking distance. The benefit of that. So, are there any other areas, though? Because we have kind of a cluster of development that we hope to see around the Mount Si Road. that probably will be within earshot of some multifamily. You know, are there any other areas in the city that you see that happening where it's a mix of residential and commercial?
I don't think convenience stores being residences and their jobs. It's not people's jobs, people who work service businesses. Their jobs are probably on the ridge or where we build, if we build up industrial work here, they'll go there and they'll see them. Unless they live in the middle for a community walking to work.
Maybe if we could go to the last sentence of the first paragraph, use that as the last sentence. These neighborhoods are characterized by pedestrian orientation and are linked by the city's existing compliant network of pedestrian and bicycle trails. Hearing that, and then I go into this other thing, it goes to my mind that, okay, cool, every neighborhood within city limits is going to have access to some trail of some type so that I can either get on my bike, walk, jog, do whatever it is, non-automotive, to be able to go from point A to point B, as opposed to we're designing clustered communities so that they're shopping in every little neighborhood or whatever it is. They're like what you'd see in Seattle. So maybe if we start tailoring some of these other paragraphs to start speaking to that, plugging into the existing network for a broader does that make sense?
Perfectly. We ought to be including here rabbit trails.
Yeah.
There'll be a rail going down 90 in the 30 years. We should talk about putting our communities so our members can access transportation.
And the other point that goes into it, spirit is here again, is the second paragraph, last sentence there. Maybe strike this sentence or edit it, but in addition, the city seeks to reduce urban sprawl as it encourages compact development, helping preserve the natural lands adjacent to the city. So there's something in that sentence that is confusing to me, and I'm not sure what it is.
Should it be lands outside the city? Because ultimately, that's what we're doing, is we're compacting ourselves inside the city so that we're preserving the open space around us. To me, that's what's being compacted.
Okay, well, that sentence, like you just said, that plays on the recorder, because maybe that should be the last sentence. Or, you know,
right. The city of North Bend is compacted.
But here, we don't own the land that's around. It's all owned by others, the public, primarily.
But that's the sacrifice of the city, right? Is that we can't sprawl to those areas, that we are compacting. Is that
correct? Yeah. The developments that you can see within the city limits are not permitted outside of the city limits in the county's zones. It's a much less dense zone that's allowed.
I just think that the terminology compacted is not conducive to the world.
Now, that is a good point that you could make to us as this commission. And that's what, if you go back to that plan vision statement, what is our vision for the city? And does that reflect then what we want for the city of North Bend? Because certainly we're going to cluster more than we can outside the city, but how clustered is up to this commission?
See, I think this paragraph is perfect for thinking about, like I said, the 6-block radius of downtown North Bend. That's very idealized. It's very modern. I like that. The police force should have fun. Bustling,
so
almost 24-hour-a-day business now.
Mr. Ryan, would you consider then clustering in our downtown commercial zone to be the utmost priority rather than LDR zones? Could we assign it a zone relationship? Would that work? Buddy?
We could take some of these paragraphs, put them into the downtown neighborhood.
Yeah,
discussion.
I was just going to say,
if you like them, let's just move them over to downtown neighborhood and make the neighborhood planning areas D5 just more general intro into here's our neighborhoods.
I totally agree. Just, we're getting at the connected piece. And then when we get down the downtown,
we'll do it.
Quarter, that's great.
That's exactly right.
We'll do it. We'll move it to downtown neighborhood.
I have a question on the first sentence. 14 neighborhood
first sentence where?
Oh, sorry, yeah. 5. Same section. 14 neighborhood planning areas have been established to create land use patterns that will help the city maintain its existing character. Now, does that go back to the previous page? Where the 14?
No, you go to the next page, and there's a
figure.
And there's also a large map.
For me, like my note to myself here is 14 neighborhood planning areas have been established. Well, when was this, and is there a reference to that?
We discussed this 3 months ago or 2 months ago.
Yeah, but just reference the, I think, reference figure
the
or whatever.
Because it's just something that comes out.
Okay.
But then have been established, maybe when it was established.
Or based on
14, how about just 14 neighborhood planning areas are identified in figure 3? Figure 1.3.
Yeah.
Identified. Okay.
Let's see. Oh, because you're capitalizing the city or not capitalizing the city. So then the 1, 2, 3 paragraph will start to make the identification of that paragraph. Down to the second lesson. Mm-hmm. Streetscape and pedestrian scale are further components identified as critical elements to achieving a humane environment. There's something interesting about that. But since we're going to start moving things to the ground, I'm going to go to the there's something about it to achieving a humane environment, something about it.
Probably old language that was more of our tone. It's more wordy.
I also why they look at things from sources to make my point. You know, may not the work you made come for me, I would use it.
I would consider
which
is the last
humane,
okay.
Are we abusing the environment? Are we treating the environment like humans?
I think we'll still always be an inhumane.
The big customer.
We are page 11, I guess this was. And just check common usage and getting rid of some.
And you'll give us any that you've noted?
Yeah. I stop, because I'll go through and I'll just stop. But yes. Okay. Anything on page 11? Page 11. There's something more. Note here is anything else. And the reason why I said this is that we're going from 2000 to 2008, and a lot has happened since 2008. Is there anything else that can talk to our downtown neighborhood piece that we've done since 2008? Just curious. Maybe not. But I swear, there's got to be something else.
The 2008 is just referencing a plan. And then we talk more about the downtown neighborhood goals and interests that we have in that neighborhood.
I think there was...
Where did I see that?
Yeah, and there's somewhere there that does talk about the civic center.
Yeah. So my call out here is if there's anything that's happened between now and 2008 that would be relevant for this section, let's put it in there. Because otherwise, at this point, I'm reading this as an outdated document. If I'm somebody new, because everything's been cited.
One of the big things about the downtown is that there's workplace of the geek. In other words, that used to be a used to kill my cell 6 o'clock dead, and now we're going down there better.
Did we spruce it up for this advice thing? Or bust it up, have plywood with artists. I mean, we did an artist type of renovation in some of those areas. That's something else.
Okay. Page 12 or 13, any comments?
Page 13. Should we tie siphoning neighborhood and Shamrock Park neighborhood together, or is that somehow? Shamrock Park is
the first one is Shamrock, and the second one is Bill Weston, and they are similar in the breakdown of some of the other residences that are two very distinct communities, and not that they have any meetings, but I think they have various things, and I know they are
Shamrock is part of
Behind Safeway.
Yeah, behind Safeway.
kind of their ground.
Well, Mountain Valley Center neighborhood.
Well, want that. Maybe it's just the point of a parenthetical.
I don't think it's a representative name.
Sounds like we're all in agreement with that. That's a really good point. So we just need to think of the name.
Maybe grab a title from a house, and maybe it has like.
I think in the story of that land was all glacier. Pioneers.
And they still own.
And they still own the
site. Right behind my house across the river.
So yeah. Why not then just say Glacier?
I think that the. But I think calling it the South Fork Residential might work. Because it makes sense. It's so. Yeah. When people talk about it, they're the house is the best. If you're from Shamrock Park, it's just a flood of people in the house. So that might actually be just as
important. Okay.
Even though it's being used for something else.
Okay.
And if anything else comes to your mind or something else gets brainstormed,
well, I'm sure Ted is a little helpful.
Yeah, the perfect name.
Well, you can probably put some sort of check off.
Right, and we moved a little way away from the language describing where the neighborhoods were and included these maps instead of because of
they're very
hard.
They're hard to read, but they're very hard to read.
Okay, page 14 and 15.
So, 15 is an example of something that maybe is a error that we could cite for our master plans. Earlier means that. I'm just trying to think of how to get more upfront data points that are really relevant today.
It doesn't really. You don't have to have a separate D7 for shoreline if that's all we're going to say. We could just move it up.
I would propose.
More in the.
In the intro.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would encourage any sort of.
There used to be a lot more in this element related to shoreline. Now that we have its own element.
We don't need to, yeah. But my only point is that the more we can show that timeline, this is
2010, 2008,
the better.
Okay.
What are you proposing for all the policies that are.
These policies are related to everything. Previous that we talked about, so they're not just related. They're the neighborhoods.
Yeah, some of them fit into high density, some fit into low density or constrained residential.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's where I'm kind of not clear of.
On where the, I think the goals would stay where they're at.
Just the D7.
Just the D.7 shoreline.
Okay.
That would move. Yes.
I gotcha. Yes. Just that paragraph.
Yes. Goal 3 would stay the same.
Right. I'm clear. Thank you. Okay, so then LU3.11 on page 15, we have low density residential. Should that be low density and constrained residential or just constrained residential?
We should add and constrained. In a constrained area. But I would leave the whole list.
Anything else on page 15?
That's a good call out because I think we have to do this.
Page 16. I do have one question. Parks, open space, and public facilities. Can you tell me, does a cemetery fit under that heading? Or if not, where does it fit?
Yes, cemeteries are part of it, right, guys?
Yeah.
Yes.
Cemeteries.
It's part of a. Yeah.
U.S.
Shown on there.
Could you add that word in there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is where it calls out that the zoning may be segregated to two distinguished lands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the second paragraph.
Just a formatting question. So if you notice how throughout the document we have our bold subsections very bolded, when we get into the LDR, I love using the line breaks between LDR, but we're kind of going into an inconsistent
thing. Oh,
So,
yes, these ones.
Yeah, if we can do that, put the paragraph starting with it just for consistency.
Yeah, and
unless that's a specific legal way.
No, and we
1.2.
We are going to have the whole chapter prettied up, formatted, revamped, and that's we just are getting this, and it's
totally fine. Yeah,
so we didn't spend a lot of time
because there's a shift, and I'm like, okay, is this new type of information I should be paying attention to relative to what I've been doing at this point?
So, let's see, you would rather the text start below just like this?
Because you've already trained me so far to put the document that way.
Right, but all of those are unnumbered, so they're like, I guess, the first subtitle, and these are the second
subtitles,
so just how differentiating is it, as of, and not bold it, or bold it and italicize. Right, I get what he doesn't like.
Yeah.
I get what you don't like. I got that. No, I just want to know the difference, how to show the difference between
The first subtitle versus the... You could either keep it bold and italicize it.
Right.
You could add numbers to it that makes it...
Or E1A.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, we've gone back and forth with how the best way is to do this, and... it seems like we all look at it differently.
Well, that's fine. I just pick away.
Yeah.
What about LDSU?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What else? Kick a hand with it. Pull a pin in the back right there. That's when we talk about LDR, as I said, 4 units per acre. This would be the time to say we should invite people to say no more than 4 units per acre and just say a flat 4 units per acre.
Okay, and you're on page
16 under low density residential.
Okay, residential. Yep. Any girls?
Not more than 4 units per acre. Because I think we're tying our hands by requiring 4 units per acre.
We're not getting any. So a maximum of 4.
Well, we get liberty to have 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And gross, that's also gross. In net, yeah, you're getting closer to 3.5.
So
at a maximum density.
What was it?
Anything else on page 16?
That was too easy. I expected more pushback on that.
That's a good point.
You
need to say
minimum. Yeah. Page 17. Brendan,
I'm just kidding. We're going to talk about nice things. We should go east bend, north bend way, or should south road change the path wise. You know, there's things like that we're going to look at. Unfortunately,
we're not
getting sure that my mind is. Yeah.
Okay, so.
That's a couple of documents,
too. Under E4 commercial, downtown commercial, it's really nice to read something about encouraged to conform to traditional Northwest vernacular architecture, front onto streets, including pedestrian amenities. Why can't we go one step further and talk about colors? Can we not look at some kind of color palette that we would like for our city.
We do have that in our design standards. Natural earth tones.
We have art commission that can decide about this.
I'm totally fine, but some direction that says that we want you all to not be purple and pink, or lime green. But it fits their culture. Does it fit?
Well, it's also very rich.
If we're talking historic palettes for town, we're not doing just that. I've read some of that back when Thompson's Cafe was just about 14 and 8. It was bright red to them. That was a big deal. So we're not, we have this kind of interesting mix. Well, so I don't know about, you know, again, it's a design issue rather than putting it here, but if we're talking colors.
Twin Falls Middle School, for example. They went through a selection process and they came out with five or six of their top ones and they painted each side of the school one of those colors. So why couldn't we take a color palette like that and apply it to downtown? That's, you know, it's Northwest kind of neutral colors. I don't necessarily want to prescribe what the color should be. I think that standard should be set by someone. And I think we ought to put that language in here that we want standard or consistency of some kind of color palette.
Consistency of the aesthetic standards.
Does that get to color?
Well, isn't that the vernacular architecture?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know that
question.
Yeah. The
first
question. So, architecture and palette?
What's the current basis of land use design ways? Downtown commercial areas. Is it symmetry or is it just continuity of this?
I think that a lot of it is, like this is saying, so the idea is to create this pedestrian friendly as far as, you know, bringing, and I'm talking about one building in particular that I've been working with, a developer, who spent a lot of time making sure the building's creating this, promoting a really walkable, friendly downtown neighborhood. And then when it comes to the building, there's a lot of, we're looking at like Mount Size behind it, so we don't want the roof to cut off Mount Si, we want it to kind of have natural lines, and then we don't want the building all to not have any modulation and to use more natural. What we've been looking at is using more natural textures and colors.
So it's not like you don't
so
want everything to be one color, you know?
Right, exactly.
Wants
yeah.
Trim,
so,
accents.
So, and I'm not sure if that answers or helps.
I'm thinking of Santa Barbara. You go down to Santa Barbara, they have a particular motif that's repeated as the Spanish tile arches. And after that, they pretty much go the other way. And they keep one thing going to tie them together. We also didn't have a notion about that.
We don't have a strong.
You know what I'm getting from Stonewall that's looking very attractive these days is the streetlights. That's a common theme down that new road. Mm-hmm. And that adds stuff that's not blocked. When mm-hmm. you have those kind of street lights here, you don't see the future as well. And that one little thing kind of makes that street
mm-hmm.
walkable.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
this is obviously you can't get your most pink, but it would make sense if all the things were not built in this place.
Yeah. Well, I think it's all the new development will be regular, right? These are just the buildings that have been modified. It's a property.
Yeah, well, that's the character of that. Our North End is really has more character than those of probably with two sides of the street. They work with one side of the road. So we have a lot of potential there. I like the variability of the buildings. I like that a lot. Can't build it that way. That's just happened. Mm. So, you know,
is the variability. So that, to me, actually says you're not supporting having a more prescribed set of design standards that they would follow.
Pretty simple to say, it would be all covered the same line from the store to the street and not the sidewalk. So, but one store has that line in front.
And awnings are actually required.
So I don't hear you going against the overall Northwest style.
No, I'm just saying, have a variety of wood textures, natural texture materials.
I think those are all
So I'm not trying to prescribe certain colors, because I think if you go to vibrant colors, then it's more lively, it's brighter in the wintertime, right? I don't know what the right mix is, but I think they ought to have some kind of consistent theme. Maybe the downtown business owners commission, whatever they are called, they can come up with something. No, there's a downtown business.
Well, that's something that goes up here.
Well,
I think adding and color palette after the vernacular architecture is good.
This is a flat. Very good. All right, moving on from 17 to 18. Master plan overlay districts. Who would like to begin? All right. So, I guess my one question goes under additional MPODs. Where do we learn more about them? Where are they better described than in this document? Because I don't understand, like, what they are, and above that, we get such good descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just left with, here's the title, go figure where it is.
We can make a specific reference to the sections of the code, if those change, then we can make that reference. But we didn't want to repeat everything that's already in the code.
I agree with that, but if you give me a pointer, then I know where to go for that.
Like, so, North Bend Municipal Code, we could add a reference to that, and they are described in detail.
Yep. Parenthetical somewhere in the first paragraph.
Okay, it does say that under additional MPOD. Incorporated
the North Bend Municipal Code, and then a sentence at the end that says, for additional information, refer to North Bend Municipal Code.
So the North Bend, that's the first sentence, the North Bend Municipal Code provides a process.
Right. And what I heard him say was that it was the additional MPODs that he was looking for additional information on, because the first three were described more thoroughly. So.
And if the other ones are also contained there, you could make one reference for that entire section at the bottom, and that would be sufficient. Okay. Other thing I had was on goal 5, maintain an urban separator overlay district in the Meadowbrook Tollgate neighborhood. And it talks about boundaries, a visual break, and landscape, and that kind of stuff. I could have sworn that Jenna told me that we have overlays for our entrances to the city at key points and also at Mount Si Road. Mount Si Road and North Bend Way. So I don't find that here. Where would I find any
overlays? No, we have gateways identified. We have transitional landscape areas, which gets into a goal 6.
So it would be a gateway then?
Yeah, well, we identify gateways in our downtown master plan, but no, it's not an overlay.
Can you think of more places in the
I'm just wondering, what's the difference between a gateway and an overlay? I understand what the gateway is, but why isn't the zoning contained in an overlay of whatever underlying zone it is to say what you can and can't do there, or what it tends to, you know? Yes, it's a gateway, but why isn't it part of an overlay zone? As the feature entrances.
Discussed in more detail.
Right, and there's additional design standards for the neighborhoods. But not side roads.
There are. Yeah, it's not an overlay district. So this is different, I guess. Yeah.
Here's what I'd like, is to have a policy under the separator overlays that govern the gateways, and that we can't have an auto body shop or, you know, oil change station there that you have certain landscape, whatever it is. I think we ought to think about that as we're starting to develop now, to put those overlays in place so we're being thoughtful about the aesthetics of our city where a lot of the tourism happens. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on
that? Would that be the next section, transitional landscape?
I don't know if it speaks to landscaping as much as it is the uses of that intersection and the landscaping. So I'm sure we might have it somewhere. I'd like to see the policy here. Does that make sense? I can only read so much.
I think it's good to add a policy. I don't know if right here, because this is specific to the Meadowbrook Tollgate neighborhood.
Yes.
If you want to be specific to all the gateways.
We'll get rid of the specificity in the goal of Tollgate and Meadowbrook and make the goal more general to specifically talking about those areas.
Yes. And so I'm just wondering, if we have some mention of gateways and policies there, or refer to.
Okay.
Additional overlays.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't be more direct. I would like to be specific, but
for the last two items on 19, I noticed that you put in a heavy pitch for the National City Fire. That's the first thing I said, was that that's a very important element in this town, is getting that recognition. We should probably have that thread through our documents somewhere, so it is throws it for
maybe up front, or we're looking for more relevant
or livability. I mean, is there a quiet agreement between the cities not to really use the Greenway, not some Greenway name in any communities that yet? It seems like we do an awful lot of cooperation with neighborhood partners. Particularly online, I think we ought to get credit for it. By mission and name, we're taking credit for it. But I think that we do involve a lot of policy with them. We actually bring business to our town through that. And so, we're partners with them. I think that it would be a policy decision on the council effort to give them a lot of exposure, but I think that's not bad. And they have a tendency to have fairly liberal views on the rival project, which is supported. Remember when they emphasized with deference that all the trees were cut down on I-90 blocking the view of the shopping center. Because it was Dixon Newbetter, he just did it. They put the center of the city in Nashville, you know. But Greenway, promoting, you know, shields up there. They're up to defying the world beautiful. And it's things like that that they can't take credit for. But then our downtown area, they're using green shields for spaces.
shows what it does is this particular 6.1 is something that seems very choppy to me about it. And I'm not sure if there's different points that maybe different policies that maintain the transitional landscape area help buffer any compatible uses.
I just think they want to get it on the page.
Yeah.
Just make worse about this on the page than.
Because that's my note. Yeah, myself, just cleaned up because I feel like there's different things happening here.
There's two different thoughts. There.
Yeah.
This is not the high. This is something that I can look forward. It's not a shame, but.
No, it's bad. It's more here.
Where's the date when this kind of thing was frowned upon? That's
page 20. Hearing none?
Well, sorry.
No, I'm the one that wants to
So, I dig this section. There's something about it that felt like, should the goal be, it says maintain the transfer of development rights program. I think the goal should be, because I understand it should be maintenance piece, but is there any reason why we would want to promote and grow this? Like, make this a bigger issue?
Yeah, it just, the market hasn't.
We wanted it.
The market hasn't. So it's always, and actually, a lot of cities look to us because they're, wow, North Bend has a TBR program. It's
totally
cool. They love it. They appreciate it. It just hasn't been utilized.
So I'm wondering if it could be. Just throw some pom-poms and fireworks on it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's just three different places we should
increase instead of maintain, encourage.
Yeah. Well, and I like the LU said that too, about regulatory incentives to encourage transfer.
Yeah.
Maybe capitalize that, I don't know. From sending areas and purchase of development rights and exceeding it. But I think that's a
is page 21, and I would ask you to reference the updated copy in your handout. I'm going to say on the market adjustment that you discussed, the 5% market factor, I agree not to use one. I think knowing from a few friends, houses selling in a day doesn't speak to needing a market adjustment.
Well, I don't know. Like, where I was going was actually calling out the caveat that, you know, how it was assessed a little bit more clearly with the, earlier than 2006, it would have been 10%, right? Like some way to provide proper context for what it is and how we're using it, and the extreme case, right? Because that's the one thing that was like, wait a minute,
not every year is going to be the same. 5%, be 10%. And in fact, we have an example where it was. But I think somehow
the lifting of the water moratorium, totally. The current retail or home sale market, yeah. The pending permits, those are all the factors.
And why you exactly? If we're going to consider that within our data and our stats and whatever. Somewhere, it could be a footnote or something like that.
Our decision not to use, or it was used in those the water moratorium, we're basing it on housing sales, time on market, number of permits in the pipeline. Any of those things that are showing a growth.
Was there a date to the Growth Management Act?
2004.
Should we include it?
At the bitter time.
Well, I just, you know, we're banking some decisions on this, so I'd like to probably win that. Yeah.
This was.
It was 95.
And then there's been, so it's going to be updated.
So I'm just asking, putting that out there. The second one is, Ben has analyzed the preceding years as well as forecasting capacity for future anticipated growth. What was found in that analysis? It's great that it had been analyzed, but then we go right into the King County Buildable Land Report. That's to me not the North Bend doing. What did North Bend find?
So that's the next sentence.
I'm sorry. North Bend is a subset of the King County Buildable Land Report. We reported to King County as a pipeline.
Can we add that note? That we did this work, we came up with these data, which helped inform the King County deal. Something like that, because I read that and I'm like, okay, cool, we'll be fine. There wasn't anything there, and then I see this new ad, but that doesn't really tell me what we found, what we did. Because I like the fact that we can demonstrate we're taking some action, and that we're actively involved in the statistics that we're using in the future. Unless it's totally wrong.
Right, no, I think it's a good point. Can we just, and maybe this is what you're saying, but so we know what to do, add the buildable lands report into the sentence before, so it's a little more smooth flowing. Like North Bend has analyzed the preceding years as well as forecast capacity in comparison with the buildable lands target.
Perhaps make North Bend, that last sentence, the big paragraph. Mm-hmm. That's what you're saying. North Bend has analyzed all this. Which informed the 2014 King County, which helped inform the 2014 King County. Because if those two are, if that's the relevant point that North Bend did something to help contribute to King County's, which helped base this platform for the forecasting from, we should know that.
I think, right. I think the sentence was also getting at, we've done this buildable lands analysis throughout the years preceding this. Historically, yeah.
I'm just saying how I read it was we did something, we analyzed something, we did a forecast, what was it? And now we're going to keep counting buildables.
And I think forecasting might be, we did a calculation of what we did on the board. We did actually a statistical analysis of what was available on the
So what's the relevance of calling that out with that? What's the relevance of calling that out if we're linking it to the King County Buildable Land Report?
So the King County Buildable Land Report gives us a target. It gives us two, and here we're discussing two targets, the housing target and an employment target. But what the analysis that Mark has done shows us what our capacity actually is and do we meet that target. So, and same with employment. So that's what North Bend has analyzed. And so we didn't necessarily support rebuildable lands. They gave us targets, and through Mark's analysis, we determined that, in fact, we do meet that target.
Okay, so just then maybe we get rid of that sentence, because I know we bring up the analysis that was done later in the second paragraph,
right.
But we call it out here, and then it falls flat, because then it goes right into whatever this was. So if we lead with... If we want to keep it, it would be North Bend analyzed this, which is supportive of what the King County point. If we're going to leave, if we're going to have that statement there, let's say what you found first and how it supports with the land use or somehow ties in with why this is relevant here, or we strike it out, and then we say, okay, we're following King County, blah, 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 to do X, Y, and Z. We conducted our own analysis, which did blah, blah, blah.
Right. Because
they just seemed disjointed.
Right.
I got all excited. We did some analysis. We did some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Oh.
We still did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Something different.
I guess my question is going to go more towards your thoughts, and I think it starts with this body. Our housing target of 665. The analysis showing potential 2,821 new housing units. So our rough estimate, their rough estimate of population is 12,000. So I'm not sure if your thoughts are that's great for our city in 20 years. It should be bigger, it should be smaller, or that's just right. I kind of just want to talk about that for a second, because that speaks to the zones which we've applied, and you can see the zoning mix that we have on that chart, and that's why I kind of wanted to look at that to say that, you know, we have a big mix of LDR, and so if we were to, you know, not be comfortable with our population growth number, then what zone do we, you know, slice a little more out of, because there isn't, when I thought about it, there's not much more to take from it.
Yeah, the only other thing I would add is, again, that 12,988 is assuming full build-out. We're not going to see that in 20 years. Again, it's probably it's highest and best all throughout.
I will look at the worst-case scenario.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with, we might be close to their thoughts.
Considering,
I can go into detail.
Well, let's just bring this up. We're already there. I mean, we're already a year down the road, so why is there any reason to think you reach that maximum? So I get the reality that it's not. But, you know, we're already here at our 20-year projection, and we're in year 11. Yeah.
Typically, our targets have been low on purpose, thankfully. King County's, you know, has done a good job in putting less of the burden to us, our rural cities, but
and also
we're
that
feeling the crunch.
Bellevue and Issaquah had wanted to grow, and they would take some of the larger share.
But for a number of reasons, we're feeling the crunch, and the Fed is more desirable.
Well, and the markets would tend to dictate each build out, because the infill development potential is pretty high, but super is totally.
Not to mention the waste of
that's
where it starts.
Correct. The piping system or treatment plant, whichever way you've got to move it down the pipe.
So, if we are, I want you all to just keep this in mind as we go forward in different things that we eventually, after this is done, get into our transportation element again. You think about what a city of that size would look like with our global traffic, and you think about Front Street and Gilman, and you know what you don't want. So we should look real critically then, based on what we've zoned and where we see the population, to make sure we have the right capacity for streets.
Thank you.
I appreciate your thoughts. They are well received, and another reason why I have to mention past that we get to the transportation element once we're done, whenever we finish, with our comp plan update.
You've got a question about the LDRs, what natural climate date, as long as we, all of our policy focuses on rural lifestyles that we like, my opinion, not the number, but it's moving that maybe we can actually enforce that. I think the dollar zone used as a rule is going to be.
So, one of the things I think about when I was thinking about that number and, you know, how I love the little town we live in and don't want it to change, and then I think about, you know, how can we accommodate people who are waiting on us in restaurants, our teachers in our schools, they can't afford the $500,000 to $600,000 houses, right? So all that went to why I proposed HDR. And you know, if we have the right mix or not, we'll find out in time. But to grow in density, to me, then looks at further going into what HDR is in 3 stories to 4 stories, so you can fit more capacity. Thinking about, you know, other areas that are mixed use or not mixed use today, and making them mixed use.
So I would share your voice on that. Is that if you do that, you can downtown core, what was refined to 2 and 3 story, 4 story. HDRs, and I don't think we have enough. I mean, we're woefully lacking in that inventory. And I really have children in my house. I have friends that deal with all legal poles because they leave the town. They can't live with families. Moms here, dads here, they live in the city. They have very high costs. We don't have the inventory, but they would stay here and spend money.
So it's food for thought, and as we, I guess, move forward, just be mindful. Okay, to the tables, page 22 and 23.
Are we looking at the tables specifically? Or
no, specific? Page 22.
Okay. There's something again, the way we can clear up H. Yeah, I'm not sure if the citation is right here when we're talking about citing here H4E, but I go to H4A, I don't find H4E balance. So my note is, do we ever use H4A? Maybe I missed it, but I was confused about the paragraph, but then I was also confused about which tables we should use. Which for you is in this section. We got a big table.
Right. Yeah, so the residential land supply, H.3, page 21, is referencing the 847 gross acres of development from the land. That's the gross acres. It's also 573.74.
So is that section that's referenced? Just table goes to that section. Well, I mean, there's two things. Let me just say, I don't have any recommendations on how to clear up this paragraph, but I just...
To reference table H.3.
Yes. And then we have... So the paragraph is one thing. And then the next thing is, we have a table on the following page, which I think is relevant to H.4. Mm-hmm. We have a table that's cited H.4.2. A, which I think goes with H.4 section, but I don't see anything in here referencing that table, but I do see a reference to H.4.B, which is on the following page 24.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. Is H.4.A, how is that?
That is referenced, those numbers. After the third line down, the 2015 comprehensive plan zoning build-out analysis, and the rest of that is all referencing to what H.4.A. Yeah.
Okay, so do we need H4.A if we've got a separate zone already?
It breaks it up into the different zones.
So instead of a summary, it's a detail of the
yes.
capacity?
Yes.
So, the question then is, do we use both? If we use both, then let's say each what mobilization H.4.A brings us here.
H.4.B is giving your capacity.
Right.
Percentage range. Yeah.
It just seemed redundant, and only one was cited, so I wasn't sure what the significance was, unless there was a table mislabeling.
So you guys use these tables in your shop, or just what was part of the section?
We don't use them on a regular basis. No. But, like Mark said, we're mandated to do this analysis. It's useful and helpful.
Make it public friendly. If you want to use it, your guideline, your textbook.
Mm-hmm. If we don't think that the public wants to see it broken down by its own.
This table is basic. Cities and see what they're doing,
yeah.
And then you look at our city,
that's a good point for our areas.
Okay. So, one suggestion would be we move all the tables to the appendix, we have them in strategic order, and if we're going to have a table that's such as big as this one, HF4.A, let's reference on that so that we know to apply that information. But also, then it's in the appendix and it doesn't break up and disrupt the flow because I got to tell you. Public friendly, consumer friendly. Wait, one time. No, here's the QGIS table.
Yeah.
And then if we don't need make the table, this make the summary a chart or a graph or something,
yes.
And then for the details, see this table.
Exactly. Because that goes exactly.
So it's more of a table.
If we can do a simple chart, please, by all means, do that.
As opposed to, and then refer to the table for all the detail of that.
Unless you think absolutely they would have to be able to separate them. So, like H.5.A, London has a capacity for 6,907 new jobs for boundary capacity. All potential employment zones are within the current city limits. No employment zone for any from GA. That's cool. Oh, boom, here's a table. What am I reading? Job capacity. Do we need that support here?
I kind of like it so it's all in one area. I get the lengthy table that it breaks up the text.
Well, if we're going to use the tables, we need to call out what the table is referencing, what the significance of that table is. Like you did on H.4, it's great, right? Northland has achieved 33% with all remaining target of 46 blah, blah, blah. See table 4, H.4, H.4.B. Now I know if I need to know more detail about that point, I can go to that table.
Instead, it should refer to 4A and then put the chart or graph of 4B in here, which is just 3 points.
Because 4A isn't referenced at all, but my whole point is that if you've made the point already in text, there's no reason to show the table unless it's super complex in detail. In which case, it's happy to throw it in the appendix and reference it like you have here. Because then I can go to the appendix and have any more information.
Well, I'm just looking to see if anyone else has an opinion before. If we were to move them all to the appendix,
and then,
I would hate to do that if not everyone else wants to see the appendix.
everybody else have an opinion?
Yeah, I agree with everybody. I hope everybody else is a great person. I think it's very scattered. I think you lose track of the important group, which is the purpose. So I kind of like that. It's there if I want it, but I'm going to focus on the support.
We don't have a good strong opinion either way. We want
to push it.
The other thing on that, when we have the four A's, we have several log tables that say, on page 25, I look at H.6, commercial and industrial development. No, I don't even know what we're talking about there, other than what that subject is, but it goes right into a table. So that's one thing, right? So maybe some text needs to be there instead of table or whatever. But then the second thing is, we have table H.6.A. It's leading me to believe that there's an H.6.B because we have an A there, right? But I don't think there's a B in here, at least when I flip through here. So I circled some of these like H.7.A, but I'm not seeing an H.7.B. Now, if you flip to page 26, you'll see H.8.A, H.8.B, right? So if there are no subsequent column tables, A's, B's, just get rid of that.
Okay.
There, you can make it.
It would make more sense if there was text and then you had H6A, because then it would be a subsection of that text in formatting the keeping system.
Right.
So it would be fine to keep it numbered if you put the text in, what I would say. Can you go back, because I was just looking on page 23 at the table H4A. I was just wondering, the capacity in the pipeline, is there a reason why we're not going to put something in there, or is it just because it's always in flux, or what is the reason?
It was a line that was in the previous table that was not, that we discussed, but we did not populate it, so it is a moving part of it, and you have to pick a date, say on this date, this much pipe towards the end of the year. It would offer, it would, if you try it as you look at these numbers, it would be totally amazing. Well,
I appreciate that, but it kind of speaks to what Brandon is trying to illustrate, is to show that we're in a growth pattern versus the past of stagnant. So if I look at
well, we called it out way earlier in the past that it was a current pipeline.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I can't remember what page it was on.
Yep. Well, and Jamie added... Jamie added 21 of your new packets. No, wait. It's on 24.
In the new one.
24 at the top, the first red sentence.
Yeah, and I think you
more of a
meta. You can only change it once a year, but sometimes you wait. Well, 2007.
Activity report.
We could say we're
check with the CDB department for
unfortunately, our website and our abilities to manage it were.
This is something that the CDB team gets and that we requested to be provided to us, but does it go anywhere else other than that?
Yeah, CDB committee, like you said, they put it on. Yeah, put it online too. So.
So, if that is posted online quarterly, we could reference it here. But yeah, I guess we have to ask Tom where it lives.
And then should we zero out cells?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out if it should be referenced to something, or if it, there's not going to be any data. I don't see the value of keeping the line.
Extending that is that because we have units lost in commercial development and we're blank cells, and so we get to mix use because we actually have values there. So if these are good relevant data points, maybe we can each subfield that this is in over there, then maybe we have zero value.
Okay. That way we know it's
not in the past. So that's as opposed to what it's saying.
And it could be just a note at the end of the table, capacity effective, but, you know, as of April. Mark, is that a huge effort to
part of the challenge is to put it in there without having it affect your actual subfolder.
So it all gels?
Because it's theoretical. You know, our build out is theoretical and
is capacity and pipeline part of the buildable lands table? Can we remove it from our table so it instead of completing it, I would vote that we remove capacity and pipeline and make it part of our table. Because if we're beefing up, we're talking about the number of housing starts, techs. Why put it in multiple places? Okay, let's move on. Page 24.
Is there redundancy between H5A and H5B? I see two sentences in H5A, and I see it echoed in H5B, although I know one's talking about this capacity, and here's relative to this. I'm just wondering, is that the one?
Text in between all the tables, right? So,
well, no, I was thinking that there is just H5. H5 is deployment, right? Northman has capacity for 6,000 jobs, all the things that are up for this.
Okay.
Next paragraph, the growth management planning council, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Unless you wanted to call this specifically out as the analysis as a subsection of.
There isn't a consistent like analysis theme for each one.
And you don't have that. It's just that. Do we really need an A and B? I think you probably did it because of the tables. But in the same paragraph, you could cite two different tables.
Well, I kind of get that they wanted analysis and capacity relationally.
But I mean, you lead with the analysis, and then you lead with the competitive set. And then you follow the competitive set, right? What has a relationship to what we're trying to do? These are analysis and these are what our goal is.
said the text intro for commercial and industrial development. Any questions about that? Mark, I want to know, in your memo, and I'm sorry, I must have left it at the computer, you put a analysis on numbers for housing units above commercial, and it wasn't the same square footage as applied below, or if it was, it was like 500 square foot per employee, but 1,000 square foot residence above.
The residential was consistent at 2,000 square feet per land area per unit, and the employee per square foot, it was based on the zone. You're talking about the DC zone.
DC or mixed use?
DC mixed use.
I think so. I'm looking for it here and here.
You're talking about the area that has the first floor prohibition.
Yeah.
DC zone.
Maybe that's it. Okay, so on page 27, I guess, is an example of that in our packet, H9C. I was just wondering if you could just talk about what the methodology there is of 500, how you come up with square footage for an employee, and not just talking about the square footage of the commercial business, and why there is a relationship to an employee, I guess.
That is how you set your jobs. You set an established square feet of the amount of commercial space you have. And that's based on some county-wide factors that have built the landscape of it. So one of the gray areas in forecasting is how many employees you're going to have in a specific situation. And so we picked a number and we stayed consistent with the number last time and this time. This one, it was in the DC, it was 500 per employee. That's based on the type of business that they expect for it. That are allowed.
So the dollars don't even have more than 500 square feet.
I think it helps dollars now. It's
2,500. But they're not office workers, though. So they're in the other category.
Retail, small boutique, retail type situation.
That's actually real, so that's interesting to look at.
But it's also, it's a basis of, you have a core area ratio that's allowed in the zone. So you calculate how big that structure can be on that area. On the first floor, now this is the area where we model these one specific development proposal that's on the explosion. That's the only thing we have going to have any idea what people are concerned about. And that's the developer's interpretation of what our zoning codes will give them and still be able to meet the requirements for utilities, stormwater, parking, when they're above that certain lot size.
Yes. Yes, I'm trying to think of what my next one was.
Okay.
I'll have to email.
There must be variables in that case. I guess it's the different for employees, especially if you shut the space in the market. First set of line of storage, probably.
Very much so. That's one of the challenges of creating a build-out is calculating the employment side. It is, the employment side and jobs are the toughest in building
this. That's, I see, I didn't realize we did that.
We have to come up with something.
Yeah. That's good. the kind of business you're in, if you're successful at.
Right. So someone like QFC, for instance, how are they? Are they more a warehouse assessment?
Grocery stores have certain, are allowed using in certain situations in the PC, and that would be a more intense use, probably more employees per square feet than what they have in that
company. I guess I'm thinking we have an existing grocery store, and according to the manager, it doesn't matter how big our city gets, it matters how often they get the deliveries.
Right.
And that means just a lot more checkers, right, and a lot more people to handle the deliveries. So the size of the structure doesn't grow, just the people that service it do.
Right.
And so how do we, like the science behind that for any business as we grow in our city, how are those things at all captured, or are they not?
Specifically captured? No, that's where you use that average ratio, that quarterly ratio per employee. And that spreads out and covers the diamond shop, where you have one person or two people, maybe even 600 to 800 square feet, 1,000 square feet. And then you have the opposite end of that spectrum, the grocery store. That's the part of the average. You look at what all the uses are across that spectrum and try to come up with an average. We've used King County help come up with those numbers. Countywide, those numbers are pretty accurate today. And they'll ask you to go
around.
It is.
I mean, it's
compass, not GPS.
So when I'm looking at, I guess, our job targets and our job capacity, is there a planning science behind a city of 10,000 people that say you should have X number of jobs or employment? Like, is there some kind of methodology that you can apply to know if we have the right mix or if we need more? Like, these are all the things that I think, you know, we get enlightened as we're going through this document to go back and make any changes.
We don't get to the breakdown of the different employments. You know, we just get to, here's our target, here's what our capacity is again.
And our capacity is enough to handle what the forecasted number of people in the workforce to be in the market will drive whether or not the businesses and the jobs come.
And how it's going to break down is probably goes more back to Arizona.
Right, but you have created the space for it.
I guess I'm thinking you can have a community that develops largely on single family homes, and as employment is dependent on elsewhere, you can attract an employment center here, in which case then the development happens because there's employment. So I just, there are two different philosophies, because the people who are living here moved here for a reason, and it wasn't for a job, so, right? And so when you have the employment opportunities, it's also going to spark a different community.
Well, the city of Elizabeth has an additional payroll tax.
Right. So, you know, do we have enough business zones when we think about, you know, the traffic to go to a service? Certainly, QFC is going to be a hard to get. I'm trying to think of a nice way to say it. It's just going to be a mess.
Well, you have to worry about that. Our snow ball's going to run right for my night. That's where they're focused on. We're thinking about filling the community down the road, what they're doing, how that's important.
Okay, anybody else have anything additional for, or any other questions? That was kind of my that, and I really don't have anything particular. Just to understand the science behind
the job.
How the allotment, and what it accounts for, right. If it's exact, or not, how close the science is.
And the land is there too, so
it's all a learning. Mm-hmm. And the ones that, you know, can change the zone or have multiple options. Okay, I'm at page 28. Does anybody have anything before that?
Opposed it, this boundary review board is still the deciding body to change the UGA line.
Yeah, that's
pretty rare though. That just isn't.
State
would change the but it seems like they're starting in the middle.
Right, that does seem odd. Maybe we could get more information on that and bring it back to you next time because
as a planning staff, this would frustrate you to have some of this problem.
City manager Londa and Ken, if they don't know. You know?
Right, that is, yeah. How about we do more research on that and learn more next time for you?
Yeah, this was discussed in council today.
Well, then they know. That would be good. That council.
County council.
Okay. The first I've heard of it.
Yep.
Okay.
You said 28, so
we'll let you know.
Yep, we are on page 28. We can get back to our document. Urban growth area annexation.
My question is intended to bring highlight on it. Should we have a policy in here which discusses this? There doesn't seem to be any policy.
Well, it's on page 29. We should put that.
Also, I mean, extending a little further, if these areas are existing down the road, should we have a separate table about potential annexation?
My question is, have we any precedent as a city to look at the map and say, you know what, that border is really funny. The county doesn't want all these people in the county. They'd rather them be part of the city. So why don't we draw our own border and close that? Our own urban growth boundary.
It was the time Riverview was being considered. They don't have a sewer, so they weren't brought in. As in where they were brought in.
Riverbend.
You're in the city.
They're in the UGA, they're not in the city limits. Because it's difficult to provide it. And that's something that needs to be considered when looking at what the...
So this is why we probably would not be willing to have this come into the city.
Well, they have to come into the UGA, but they still kind of develop, yeah, first, and it's...
Then they have to be annexed.
And then that would be, yeah, getting sewer over there.
We're creating a whisper.
So it just seems like we should have policies to protect us, either protect us or help us, help us along with the process.
The city should just find out, right?
We need to learn more about that before we can suggest a policy, because I agree that's a good point. So maybe if we can research it more and learn more about it and see if that would be a, if this is a process where they could bypass the city.
So, any precedent then for us to do such a boundary adjustment and submit it as a city?
If we want to adjust our UGA, yes. Yeah. And same with the county. So I'm thinking that's what happened. I'm thinking we have to go to the county first, just like if we're coming to the city and wanting to adjust, we would have to go to the county. The city would go to the county.
Could you come back to us with a process and a time where we could discuss that?
Yeah, because I don't, I mean, I'm looking through, I don't think we really address outside of the UGA. Yeah, outside of the UGA. Because eventually, we haven't run up against it yet, but eventually we will. Are those UGAs going to grow, change? The Growth Management Act hasn't even contemplated that, you know, very much. We show that there is, so there's not the need to expand it. But you know,
this kind of land use action advisory enforcement was jump the zone, it was jump the road, jump into urban. It's smacked up against the forest. Remember that? That caused a huge uproar in the county. They just overlooked the zoning that was going to be affected by the urban annexation. This has the same potential to move.
And it won't be at 2.5 per acre if it's in the city. And that's the I know that the city management has had meetings about this. Site. They have had meetings. Lonnie and the mayor and others have had meetings about this site, but it's been more commercial wanting to come in and develop there. And about any residential.
Any more questions about any of the data points? I'm opening up. Did I miss anything?
On Gold Mine, Gold Park, this is what we did, so it's like the goal is strategic annexation and urban planning areas. Process pieces that are inherent in that, and I don't know if they go here, as a policy, right? You see more like what people have back to the office instructions on how we go about moving it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if we can call this list down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets very, the tone of it changes throughout the whole document of encouraging, but we get to hear it as punitive in nature. I mean, it just struck me as when I saw the word orderly, my whole mind frame changed.
You know, I read this, I read that first one, because it's specifically the public and the city tends to grow, and they won't grow without some plan to take more. The rest of it is just CYO stuff.
Yeah.
To the city, to the developer, here's the word that's been done. It's just, it's pure simple, just this, just the checklist and then make sure they've been managed.
And it's, a lot of this is detailed in our study.
Right, and so I'm wondering if there's redundancies that we can call out of it. But again, the tone there, encourage growth and development consistent, I mean, that makes sense. Encourage orderly growth, what does that mean?
I think that has to go with the ability to deliver services and to upgrade things.
The rest of the statement says that perfectly consistent with the city's ability to provide adequate and efficient services and facilities, and the city's desire to maintain high quality service and provisions in the areas of the annex, right? So it really has one thing that works control.
And yeah, and then it's
again, it's a style of writing.
Mm-hmm. And so then the last point, 9.14, is evaluate and propose annexations for improvement.
But in the interest of time, are there any other changes? We've run a bit late. We got through it.
I have a question for Bella. It seems to be a common thread, so this only has to be answered in one place. When we talk about vacant parcels, and we're looking at a parcel the size of 1/8 of an acre that is being developable, we're looking at number one LDR on the bottom of the page, this memo from Vermont. Vacant parcels, 0.25 acres or larger, assumed to have development potential. Now, are those extraneous, undersized lots that are attached to a regular sized lot? Is that what we're talking about? Are these just random lots?
It would be any lot in the LDR zone that is above that size. Because if it is an existing lot, reality is...
Well, you might get that desk on by the time you open your setbacks.
I understand. The reality is it's probably not going to develop.
But you have to account for it in some way.
I have to account for it.
Okay. That's all I need to ask. Is it supposed to be a consistent number?
It is. Try to be consistent in this document and the way we did it. Consistent with the methodology previously, so...
Anything further? So we gave you quite a few revisions. When do you think we can get the final copy?
Well, I think more next meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of, most of them were not substantial in context. So, do you still want to see another version back?
Yeah, I think so. The important
is the final version. All right, anything else, planning commissioners? I'd like to say thank you very much for staying a bit late. staff. Mark, thank you for coming to the meeting. I will entertain a motion.
Second.
Motion by Brendan, second by Curtis.
Hi. I just wanted to say that
the meeting is adjourned at 10:11.
I just wanted to say that I'm just in the presence of Rob. And there was enough said about that possibly about didn't want to make the goodbye and well done. But a guy working on this commission for 8 to 9 years has developed a process that I don't want to ignore. I think the guy who's been there that long has earned the bones.